everybody, and welcome to my first episode of my Supernatural podcast. This is all about Warner Brothers series Supernatural. I also have a podcast on the world of fantasy, and you can check that out sometime. But this one will just be with me, Ellen. I have to tell you, I've been watching Supernatural since the very first episode from this fall, and they are wrapping up their first season. There are about 6 new episodes left until the end of the series, for the season. I think this show is very fun. It does have sort of its scary horror elements to it, but also ties in a lot of humor, and the relationships between the brothers and their disconnected family is really pretty interesting, and I hope they do some more development in that area. So I started to put together some backstory to let you know what's been happening in the series in case you haven't been watching, or if you were just a casual watcher and maybe missed some of the episodes. I thought I'd put together background information for you. But then today I came across an article from popmatters.com. It's a website that talks about all different TV shows. And back in September, there was an article by Mary Colgan all about Supernatural from the viewpoint of having just seen the pilot. It's a rather lengthy article, but it's really good. I think it expresses sort of the flavor of the series very well. So I'm going to go ahead and read this to you. Skeletal Halloweenish. Shadows encroach on a cozy suburban home. Inside, wholesomely named Mary, Samantha Smith, and John, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, tuck their 2 boys into bed. Later, Mary is awakened by her crying infant. When she enters the kid's room, lights buzz and flicker as she slowly realizes that the figure by the crib is not her husband. Although not cutting-edge, Supernatural's opening is deliciously spooky, setting the stage for a show rooted in classic ghost stories. Mary's subsequent murder is clearly supernatural. John finds her stuck to the ceiling, terrified, and dripping blood into the crib before flames engulf her. Her unfathomable death determines her son's futures. Like horror movie protagonists, the boys are defined by violence and loss, destined to be skittish, grim, and forever estranged from, quote, normal society. 22 years later, finds younger brother Sam, Jared Padalecki, trying to escape his fate by applying to law school and refusing to share his past with live-in girlfriend Jessica, Adrian Palicki. Of course, into his safe life comes older brother Dean, Jensen Ackles, to ask his help in finding their missing father. Though the family consists of men living together, Sam is quick to clarify that they aren't the Brady Bunch. Like many college students, he feels ready to distance himself from his family and create a new life, though perhaps he has more reason than most. Quote, when I told Dad I was afraid of the thing in my closet, he gave me a .45. He was supposed to say, don't be afraid of the dark, he bemoans. Of course you should be afraid of the dark, Dean counters. You know what's out there. Indeed, he does. Left alone, the Winchester men live up to their name, acting as weapons against any oogly booglies they come across while hunting for Mary's killer. While Sam resents that they were, quote, raised like warriors, Dean remains singularly focused. He shows no interest in meeting Sam's girlfriend other than to briefly leer at her before getting back to the task at hand. Tensions between siblings seem to be a hot topic this season. The WB's fall lineup includes 2 series about brothers and 4 about sisters. Despite being the only other boys on the block, Dean and Sam are less like the One Tree Hill guys than the Sisters Uncharmed. Both sets of siblings are shrouded in secrecy and bound to defeat demons, whether by sacred duty or family vengeance. They differ in the usual boy-girl ways. The sisters emote by hugging, Dean and Sam by name-calling. Next page. The sibling set's differences are more significant. The sisters stay put and protect their family home. Dean, Sam, and their father, however, live in transit. By attempting to avenge their wife and mother's death, they are perhaps trying to reclaim the sense of home they lost along with her. Ostensibly about demon hunting, Supernatural also ponders how and whether a fractured family can be put back together. This theme is mirrored in the premiere's subplot. During the search for their father, the boys encounter a woman in white, the spirit of a woman who killed her children and herself by learning of her husband's infidelity, and who now kills any unfaithful man who crosses her path. A siren-like wraith, Constance, Sarah Shahi, plays out a gender-reversed cautionary tale. Careful, boys, don't pick up any pretty girls wandering by themselves on dark roads. Take me home, she begs of passerby, and when they try, she laments, I can never go home, before attacking. Though the villain of the story, Constance can also be seen in the Winchester men's parallel. Too afraid to accept what has happened to her family and home, she can only hunt whatever gets in her way. By becoming hunters, Constance and the Winchesters have transformed their sorrow into aggression. Dean, Sam, and their father have become outlaws, getting on by credit card fraud and cutting through red tape by impersonating officers. Though it has plenty of thrills and chills, Supernatural is also a modern-day cowboy story. Nomadic young men with nothing but their weaponry, transportation, and grit, obeying no law but their own. At the end of the episode, Sam tries to break away to lead an, quote, apple pie life. He comes home to his girlfriend, who has left him fresh baked cookies and a love note. Once again, the woman in his life is taken from him, and again, plastered open-mouthed with pain to the ceiling. Clearly, Mary's death was not random. The evasive baddie appears to be taunting the boys. With no home to go back to, Sam submits to his fate, ready to face the next evil with guns blazing. So I find a couple of really interesting things about this article. The first is that it really focuses on the relationship between the siblings and the family, rather than quickly jumping to it's all about horror and all of these urban legends, which I think the show consists of, but in a delicate balance. The other thing I like about it was the comparison with the cowboys. I hadn't really thought about that, but they really are outlaws living by their own rules and not really paying attention to the society around them, even though they're deeply ingrained in it at the same time. So I think it'll be interesting how this plays out. Okay, so here's the fun part. The play-by-play from tonight's episode. It was entitled Something Wicked, and the show takes place in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. Ironically enough, I grew up in Wisconsin, Northeast. I'm not really sure if Fitchburg is a real town or not, but there are a lot of small towns in Wisconsin that even people who've grown up there have never heard of. It depends on what part of the state you're from. And a lot of the cities, or well, towns, look just like this. The opening scene, you see a young girl in a bed and she's hiding under covers. And this creature comes through the window and goes over to the bed and attacks the girl. So then you flash to the boys driving into town into Fitchburg, Wisconsin. They make a reference about the Masons doing something weird, which I thought was kind of a neat reference there. Sam says, school is out, but where is everybody? There are no children on the playground at school. This seems strange because school would have just let out for the day. So the boys talk to a woman that's at the park watching a girl play on the playground and asks her where all the children are. And she says that there's some strange illness going around. They think it's pneumonia and that it's starting to attack the kids and they're all at the hospital. So we see Sam and Dean don lovely suits in which Sam's tie did not match his shirt at all. And they have a fake ID where Sam is from the CDC. And he goes to the hospital to talk to the doctor about the case. So they talk to the father of a girl who had just been attacked and her sister had been attacked just the day before. And he said that only children are being affected. It's one sibling after another. And it's like their bodies are wearing out from the pneumonia. It's a very strange illness and that they are not able to come to. So Sam and Dean head back to the house of the father that he just talked to because he realized that the dad will be at the hospital for a while. And they don't notice anything supernatural coming up on their readers in the room, in the girl's room at all, except Sam finds a black handprint in the window. It's at this time that we see the first flashback to Dean's childhood. They were on a trip to face a creature, and Dean and Sam's dad sent them back to finish the job from where he had left off many years before. In fact, Dean tells us that they were hunting in Astriga in Fort Worth, Wisconsin, 14 years before, and the creature got away. So there's a flashback to Sam being taken care of by Dean, and Dean's making dinner for him and making sacrifices just to protect his brother. So Sam goes online and starts looking up information on the Astriga, and he finds out that the Astriga prefers to attack children, and it consumes their spirit vitae, which is a life force or vitality, and they've been around since the Roman days. They're immune to all weapons made by God or man. It's at this time that Dean jumps in and says that their dad had used hook shots or rounds and that it's vulnerable when it's feeding. So Dean mentions to Sam that he saw this old woman at the hospital who looked very strange and had a cross upside down on her wall. And they thought perhaps that she was the Astriga in disguise. They tend to take an old woman disguise, and Sam made the comment that that may have been where the stereotype of witches as old crones came from, sort of that negative stereotype. So then we see Dean and Sam sneak up on the old woman at the hospital, who's sleeping with her eyes open. They confront her, and she accuses them of stealing her things and asks them to fix her crucifix since it's upside down. It is a humorous moment, and the boys realize that the old woman is not the Astriga. The next thing we see is that the Astriga comes to the boys who live at the motel that they had spoke with just a little while ago. So Sam goes to the library and comes upon an old photo from the 1890s and shows the same doctor, Heidecker, who they also had met at the hospital. Through Sam's research, he finds out that the feedings happen every 15 to 20 years, for several months in a duration and going back for at least 150 years. So here we have another flashback scene in which Dean leaves Sam alone for a few minutes to go play a game. He was getting really tired of being in the motel room. And when he came back, he saw the Astriga over Sam stealing his life force. So Dean picked up a gun and went to shoot it. Just at that moment, their dad rushes in and shoots the creature. It flies away. But Sam is okay. Their dad took him away to leave them in a safe place, but by the time he got back, the creature was gone and has not resurfaced until now. So their dad assigned Dean and Sam to come back here to finish the business that got interrupted when Sam was a child. I think it was sort of as punishment for Dean for not being there for his brother. So the boys devise a plan in which to trap the Astriga, and so they ask for help from Michael, the older brother of Asher, who was attacked the previous night at the motel. They feel that they need a lure, and Michael is just that person. So he's originally unwilling to help, but then he shows up at their room and asks them, asks Dean whether he would do anything in the world for his younger brother. And Dean turns to Sam and looks back at Michael and says, yes. Michael says, me too. So they position a security camera in Michael's room and are watching it on their laptop next door, in the room next door. They fill their guns with consecrated iron rounds, the same ones that their dad had used last time. About 3 a.m., the Astriga came into the room and started to feed on Michael, and the brothers who'd been watching it on their camera intervened, and they jumped in and they shot it, and it started to disappear. They thought perhaps it was dead, but of course not. It came back and attacked both Sam and Dean and threw them against the wall, and then started to attack and feed on Sam. And Dean intervened just in time and shot it and killed it. So we see Joanna, who is Michael and Asher's mother, arrive back at the hotel and tell them that all the kids in the hotel or in the hospital are fine, and that the doctor was out today, sick or something. And Sam and Dean kind of look at each other. Once they're alone again, Sam makes a comment to Dean about how he wishes that he had Michael's kind of innocence, and he feels somehow responsible that now Michael will always look for things in the dark and have sort of a scared way about him. And Dean looks at him and says that he wishes that Sam had it sometimes too. So we see him get in the car and start heading out of town, and we hear an Ozzy Osbourne song called Road to Nowhere, which, if you listen to the lyrics, it's quite appropriate for this episode and sort of where they're heading. So, just in case you're not familiar with a song, and honestly, I only know a couple Ozzy Osbourne songs, thanks to lyricsfreak.com, which is actually kind of a fun website, I use it a lot. So here are the lyrics. I was looking back on my life and all the things I've done to me. I'm still looking for the answers. I'm still searching for the key. And the chorus, the wreckage of my past keeps haunting me. It just won't leave me alone. I still find it all a mystery. Could it be a dream? The road to nowhere leads to me. Through all the happiness and sorrow, I guess I'd do it all again. Live for today and not tomorrow. It's still the road that never ends. And then there's a little bit at the end that says, the road to nowhere is going to pass me by. I hope we never have to say goodbye. I never want to live without you. So I liked this episode a lot. There was less action and more plot development. I also really liked the further information that we got about Dean and Sam's childhood through the flashback scenes and the interaction with their dad. Their relationship with their dad always seemed a little stormy, and his dad was not exactly the most sensitive and emotional of people, and I think we really got to see a glimpse of that. So I'd give the episode an 8 out of 10. There were a couple that I liked more, but overall this was a really good episode. Okay, so on to the fun part of the podcast. I'm going to do some analysis and discussion about the content of this week's episode. First of all, I noticed an inaccuracy when they were in the old woman's room at the hospital. It didn't really make any sense. How could that cross fall upside down by itself? It's not weighted correctly to do so. And also, to be technical, the old woman called it a crucifix, but it's not, since it's a plain cross without Jesus on it. And it just seemed a little strange. That whole part seemed a little pressured. But I understand why it's there, because the cross upside down may have been a signal that the old woman was not who they thought she was, and so forth. So I can see that, how that happened. The actual Strigna thing, creature, was pretty good looking as far as special effects go. It was a figure in a long black cape and hood with a grotesque face. It reminded me of the Emperor from Star Wars, and had freakishly long fingers, like the creatures in the movie The Village. And when it fed, a grayish light emitted from the mouth, much like the Dementor's Kiss in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Okay, let's see how many movie references I can make in this one little bit, shall I? It's like dialogue from Gilmore Girls. And on to the topic of children. Why did it go after siblings? Was it easy access or something else? My bet is that it was easier on the writers that the kids were from the same family, because you could introduce fewer characters and it set up the parallel of Michael and Asher to Dean and Sam. So the killing of the creature, when Dean and Sam first shot it, it did not die. But when it is attacking Sam, it does. Now, when it's attacking Michael, it got distracted when the boys came in and it stopped feeding, so therefore it's not vulnerable. And if you note, the same thing happened in the flashback scene with Sam as a child when he was attacked. But when the adult Sam was being fed on, it was not distracted. It was actually in the process of feeding when Dean shot it. And I think that's how it was able to actually finally be killed. Okay, and one other thing kind of bothered me about this episode. Now, the doctor, what's his name? Dr. Heidecker, was the same doctor with the same name in the photo clipping that Sam found from the 1890s. Now, I understand that he moved from small town to small town, but don't you think that the hospital would have called for references for a new doctor or figured out where he went to medical school? If it said that he graduated from medical school in 1894 or something, wouldn't they kind of wonder? I don't know. That just it the plot point was mediocre, I guess, but and didn't really matter all that much. But it just kind of seems strange to me why they wouldn't have noticed that and why he didn't just change his name and come up with fake documents and so forth, which could be the case. We don't know. Okay, and one more thing about the doctor. When Sam and Dean were talking about the creature and defining it, what they know about it, it usually takes the shape of an old woman, which led them to the old woman at the hospital. But I like how the writers changed that old woman into the male doctor. I think it's was a really good change there, and it was made it harder to predict who it actually was the killer, because a doctor is somebody you respect, and he seemed so empathetic for the cause. So I think that was a great addition. Okay, so I think that's probably the highlight of the episode. All in all, it was really great. There's not a lot for me to analyze. We didn't really get to see any predictions or sort of foreshadowing on what's yet to come. Maybe the interaction with Meg and tracking down the killer of Jessica and their mother. So it didn't really advance the storyline all that much. It just really focused on a lot of plot, I mean, character development. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen in the next few weeks. As we count down, there are six more episodes till the end of the season. Okay, so the song that they used right at the end at the credits, like I said, was Ozzy Osbourne's Road to Nowhere. And I read the lyrics to you, but I'm going to do a little analysis of the lyrics and how it really is very interesting and very appropriate for this episode and sort of the show up until this point. The first verse is actually quite obvious. You know, he's still looking for his mom's killer, and there are a lot of flashbacks in this episode and a lot of character development for Dean. And the main theme of the show is really regret. Dean feels responsible for losing the creature and not being there for Sam when he was most needed. And so I think this is this first verse really epitomizes that. The chorus, again, is really all about regret. It's regret for not being there for Sam and regret for Sam losing his innocence and childhood. In verse two, Dean made a comment a few episodes ago about not changing anything if he had the chance, and yet he carries a lot of regret. So I think that's interesting. They live for hunting and the search for the killer of their mom, and they don't think too far ahead except for the goal of killing the creature, of course. And at the end, the very last couple lines of the song, it's really about Dean wanting to put his family back together, and he doesn't want to lose Sam to California again and have this disconnected family. He really wants to bring them all together. And so he's kind of working as the mediator, just as he always did, and he is really interested in getting his family back together. Okay, so I think one thing that's really interesting about this show is that they take myths, legends, urban legends, ghost stories, the whole bit that we hear as children and in many cultures all over the world, and they tie it into the story with these two boys and their hunt. So I thought it'd be interesting to go and look at the legend of the Stiga. The legend of the Stiga comes from Albania. She is a vampire-like witch who is said to appear in the form of an elderly woman. The word is derived from the Latin word strix, which means screech owl and refers to flying demons that only attack at night. The Astiga is difficult to detect in a community. However, a telltale sign is when a young girl's hair turns white. She even attends regular church services. She could be detected during a service by passing out bread spiced with garlic, because the Astiga will not eat garlic. Another way is to place a cross of pig bone on the doors of the church after everyone in the community has gathered inside. It's said that the creature will not be able to leave the church through these doors at that time. And during the day, she looks human, but at night, the astiga can change into a moth, fly, or bee. The astiga is preyed upon infants by drinking their spiro vitae, which translates from the Latin to mean breath of life, and is in the blood of the infant. Only the astiga herself could cure those who she had drained, often by spitting in their mouths, and those who were not cured inevitably sickened and died. At least as late as the 20th century, the astiga was blamed for otherwise unexplained infant deaths, what we call crib death or sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, today. In Higher Albania, many infants ironically died in their cribs from being so overprotected from the astiga that swaddling blankets that they grew pale and sick from lack of fresh air and sunshine. Not only is the astiga dangerous for infants, they were also believed to cause adult mortalities and diseases, which were carried at night where she seeks her prey in the form of an insect. Now, you can create a protective charm against the astiga. You would follow her in her human form at night, gather some of her blood vomit onto a silver coin, and wrap the coin in cloth. By carrying the coin with you, no astiga can harm you. Most of what we know about the astiga is from two written works by Edith Durham, who traveled through Albania and other Balkan countries. The astiga is related to other witches and vampires, such as the Romanian striga and the Roman strix. Okay, so we see a lot of differences between what was portrayed in the show and what the actual legend has. Although I can imagine draining a child's blood on television is not going to go over very well from the FCC. So I guess that's why they did the Dementor's Kiss looking thing with the kids, which I think was quite effective all in all. And the whole protecting yourself with the silver coin thing, they didn't play that out. They used guns, which are much more fun, actually, than just sort of letting it live there. I mean, it had to be killed. So I can see why they did that. The change, like I already said, from the old woman to the doctor was a really interesting concept. And I think that's about it. It's an interesting legend, interesting episode, and I like how they tied it and changed what had to be changed and left other things alone. So I thought that was pretty cool. So, I absolutely hate to read spoilers. I don't want to know what's coming up. I like to make my own predictions and kind of come up with my own ideas, but I don't like to actually know what's coming up. So, for those of you who have, read things or heard things or know sort of spoilers from Warner Brothers, please don't tell me. I really don't want to know. But my predictions for the future is that, well, of course, they'll meet up with Meg and have this showdown. The trailer that I saw for next week's show had something to do with their dad, and perhaps he's injured. I don't really know. I would imagine that one of the three may be injured seriously by the end of the series or the end of the season. Maybe the dad, because he doesn't play such a pivotal point, role in it. I don't know that they'll actually, this season, find the mom's killer. I think there are a lot of other things that have to go on before they meet the baddie. Of course, in the continuation of the series, they're going to have to, unless they decide to make that a one-year season, but I doubt that. So, as far as I know right now, I really don't have any great predictions out there, but I'll keep thinking about it and let you know next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, of course. And I wanted to thank you for putting up with me tonight. This is my first show all by myself, and there are so many interesting things that we could talk about. So let me know. You can email me at supernaturalpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, check out the website and blog supernaturalpodcast.blogspot.com. Thanks to all of you for tuning in tonight, and I hope you have a great week, and I'll talk to you after the next episode. Have a great weekend, guys. Bye. The opinions expressed on this podcast are that of the host and not of Warner Brothers or the producers of Supernatural.